one of the parts of the show that we do is Here We're Not, which is like I'm thinking an idea from fundraising. If you could take an idea that's in fundraising and take it completely out of it, so that no one's ever thought of, what would you do? And me and Tom actually just recorded an episode of us railing on particular ideas, from the A to Z of fundraising to the phrase "get involved." I remember still to this day nearly wetting myself because Tom said that he hates the phrase "get involved" so much that he hates the individual letters that make it up.
You're listening to Simon Scriver's amazingly ultimate fundraising superstar podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
If you know me, you know that I love a good moan. And my two guests today, yes, two guests I have with me today, they might object to this, but I think of them as two people who like a good moan. They are thought of as the agony uncles of our sector. You might know them as the dreamboats of the nonprofit sector, two wonderfully gorgeous, lovely, beautiful guys who come into our sector and help us with all sorts of things. My two guests today are Andy King and Tom Dufresne. Hello, lads.
Hello.
I'm immediately rewriting my Tinder bio, but just give me a minute.
I'll write it for you.
I'm going to change the masthead on the website right now. That's good.
So you guys are a bit of a dynamic duo. I mean, I don't know how much work you do together, but people will know you from, you're the co-host of Fixing Fundraising, which is one of my competitor podcasts, but I'm a fan of it. Who are you guys? Maybe just give us a brief summary. Maybe start with the talker, Andy. Andy, who are you?
Who
are you?
Who am I? Oh God, existential hour. I am. Why have I immediately forgotten who I am?
Maybe you should introduce each other.
Yeah, that's true.
We've done that a few times, to be fair.
We did write each other's bios on our website. If no one has ever visited that page, 100%, I know that from the Google Analytics. If you ever did, you would see that we wrote each other's bios, which was a funny exercise.
Andy, who are you?
Who am I? I am a relationship-focused fundraiser with a lot of problems that I like to whine about in the world. I have been in fundraising since 2015. Working for various range of charities, usually in the passion stuff rather than by passion. And I have known Tom for many years for all my sins, and he asked me if I wanted to start a podcast together so that we could moan online, and I thought it was cheaper than therapy. So I said yes.
Good. I'm glad you did. And you've actually been on my podcast before. You're a returning guest.
I am indeed.
Which is few, far and few between. Tom, who are you?
Who am I? I've started to almost describe myself as a failed fundraiser now. Like someone who used to do fundraising and stopped. But I try not to say that too much in a professional capacity because I find myself advising people who are still in the sector. But I used to be a fundraiser, community really. So that was kind of my bread and butter was events fundraising and community fundraising. And then I moved into the kind of digital world. And that was kind of, that's been my obsession really ever since. I love all things tech anyway, but I ended up working for Just Giving. And now I work for Lightful, which is a social media management company. So it's all about, for me, it's all about the tech stuff. It's all about all the networking that I used to do as a fundraiser. I now try and do all of that on Twitter. That's the way I work.
Yeah, I mean, the three of us spend way too much time on Twitter, don't we?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good content.
There's a lot of good
memes. There's fundraising dogs.
There's dogs. There's memes.
Coloring books.
Yeah.
I don't know what more you could want.
Anything to avoid actually working. So for anyone who hasn't heard Fixing Fundraising, and I would say, you know, it's really worth checking out because you have great guests and the conversations go really, like they really open my mind. But what is the premise of Fixing Fundraising? Because it's not like a lot of nonprofit podcasts. What is the premise of it?
Tom, do you want to tackle that?
Yeah, I think to be honest, that's almost a bit of an origin story of like why we came up with it in the first place, which is actually, I was trying to remember it this morning, and I remember us having a conversation about, I think, Andy, you said to me something about podcasts. It was something about what's going on with charity podcasts, and it was when they were kind of the talk of the town. And
yeah,
I had the kind of inside scoop is there, as I tried to set one up at Just Giving, and it failed. It didn't take off. So I'd done loads of kind of background work into like, how can we make a podcast that is really real and talks about real problems in the sector in a really like unvarnished way? Like it isn't a marketing ploy, or isn't anything to try and convert people into doing X or Y. It's just conversations. And I had in my head like a American chat show style, you know, conversations with real people and real problems. And that is where it turned into a kind of, I think, Andy, you came up with Fixing Fundraising. I wanted to call it something stupid.
Fixing Fundraising isn't the most glamorous title.
But once we bought the domain name, we had to stick with it.
That's true. We were messed up with it at that point.
And the idea was we get a guest, and it has expanded a little bit to more than one sometimes, but a guest to talk about a problem, and it's one singular thing. And often that will meander into other issues, because obviously so much is in our sector is interconnected, but they'll really talk about one thing. And some people have come with a really specific thing, and some people with kind of more of a broad theme, but it's allowed people to have more confidence talking about those kind of issues in their institutions, wherever they work, which I think is kind of what we wanted to get out of it. What would you add?
Because it's really healthy to like, well, I think it's healthy to not moan, but to actually talk to other people about your problems. We know that it's like, you guys have said this, it's like therapy. It's like you guys, the agony uncle. And in our sector, it kind of feels frowned upon sometimes because we have to be positive and, oh my God, we're changing the world. You're a change maker. This is wonderful. This is beautiful. And there's very few spaces where we can have real conversations, which are happening all the time. But you guys have created this public forum for people actually to have these conversations.
Yeah, I think for me, there's a lot of discourse around like creating a fundraising tribe. And it was kind of showing people what those conversations can look like when you're comfortable, and the fact that it's totally okay to hate a bit of what you do or be frustrated by a bit of what you do. And that doesn't mean that you hate your job or the sector. You just have an issue, and not even that you're looking to solve it, but just by complaining about it and thinking about it from a 360 angle, you can kind of get a bit of catharticism in that way, I guess.
Because your guests are human. I mean, they have shitty days sometimes, and they have things that go wrong, and they do love their job and their sector and what they're working at, but we all have bad times.
Yeah, definitely.
It's kind of normalizing that and making it feel, for me, it's about thinking about the fundraiser who hasn't been doing it for very long, who doesn't have anywhere to have those conversations, but can, if they can hear them in their earphones and go, oh, this is normal, it might give them a bit of confidence to like challenge someone in leadership, or you know, join a group that they hadn't joined before, or whatever it may be. That might be wishful thinking, but hopefully that's what people think.
I think you're right, because I think there's a lot of, as you say, new fundraisers or junior fundraisers. There's a lot of solo fundraisers who are in an organization by themselves, and they're just being, you know, harangued or berated by people around them who don't understand fundraising. Mm. And suddenly here's a couple of voices or a few voices talking out and saying the things that are entering your mind. It's great.
Yeah, I think for me, on that theme, the one episode that sticks out the most, and if anyone is interested in checking it out, the one that I'd really recommend is the one with Chris Richardson, right? Because there's a lot of conversation about well-being in the sector and about how we can look after ourselves better. But he really deep dived into actually what the sector could be doing better to look after junior staff members, and how a lot of them are pushed into situations that they're not comfortable with, whether that's working hours that they can't claim toil for, forced volunteering, or just crazy pressure on targets. And I think that is something that if I had heard when I was more junior in my career, I would have found incredibly rewarding to know that I wasn't the only one going through.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I think I'm almost I'm compensating for what I was like when I first joined the sector, and trying to think, like, I'm trying to think of like the little me and the little Andy who might be out there, who exists and who might be like, they didn't have those kind of resources. That encourages me to keep doing it.
Well, we all have to be mindful of little Tom and little Andy, don't we? So, on the show, you guys are obviously very empathetic, and you know, it's nice to hear your own opinions and things like that. But I suppose you haven't necessarily been given your own platform for your own bugbears about the sector, your biggest, the thing that rubbed you up the wrong way. Mm. Is there something that you guys are united in, or is there something that you each have that really stands out as needing to change or you know, just frustrating you?
Yeah, I mean, we've discussed this quite a lot. One of the parts of the show that we do is an idea from fundraising, if you could take an idea that's in fundraising and take it completely out of it, so that no one's ever thought it, what would you do? And me and Tom actually just recorded an episode of us railing on particular ideas, from the A to Z of fundraising to the phrase "get involved." I remember still to this day nearly wetting myself because Tom said that he hates the phrase "get involved" so much that he hates the individual letters that make it up.
Why do you hate the phrase "get involved"?
I just think it's complete. Oh no, don't get me started. It's a completely meaningless phrase. It's one of those like tropes of the sector that's just been copied and copied and copied by organizations who are just kind of parroting each other because they think it's best practice, and no one is coming along just cutting it at the source and being like, stop saying these stupid meaningless phrases.
Yeah.
And there's so many, there's hundreds. It's not just that one. I just always find myself picking on that one.
They're the kind of group brainstorm phrases where everyone has a problem with every phrase, and then you find this completely harmless, neutral phrase that doesn't offend anyone because it's so boring and meaningless.
The best part of the whole "get involved" thing, and I feel like I can name this charity, because in this whole dialogue of things that we all hated, we're talking about if we could set up a charity knowing everything, and Tom was like, just set up Charity Water. They can do no wrong. They're the best charity ever to annoy anyone. And I went on their website and saw the phrase "get involved," and he was like, I'm so let down.
And they ripped out my heart. They punched in my heart, and they hurt me. They hurt me bad that day. Yeah.
Okay, Andy, even bigger than that then, what are you guys...
I think we were talking earlier about like more overarching things than maybe the I, N, and B of the word "get involved." kind of settled on a lack of collaboration in the charity sector. Mm. And that's not just necessarily fundraising, but to achieve charitable objectives. But I have also noticed it in the fundraising sector, in that there's a lot of lip service to learning from each other and getting involved. Triggered. And a lot of junior staff are sent to conferences and they come back with ideas and they're not necessarily taken on board. Mm-hmm. I've had instances where I've been trying to implement really quite simple procedural stuff and been told that just because that works at a different charity doesn't mean it'll work here, even though I've got evidence that it will. And then very irregularly, you do see collaboration happening. Like, charities will come together to pitch for the London Marathon partnership.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, but that's the only time it ever happens. Like, they'll get all these charities together that are tackling, say, slavery or homelessness, and they'll think about what they could achieve together with the London Marathon. They don't get the London Marathon, and they go, oh, we'll try again next year, rather than doing something with all that work they've already done. I just don't necessarily get it, and it really frustrates me.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like I've heard that from a lot of people, who they get sent to training or they get sent to conferences, and then, you know, they do learn from others, because we know we learn from others, and we see the mistakes others have made and we see the successes, and then they come back and it's just like, actually, that was just the tick the box exercise. Don't rock the boat. Don't try and do anything different. Don't come up with ideas. It's like, so where is the problem? Is it, I mean, I suppose we have to take some responsibility for it as the people involved, but is it at every level? Is it the buses, the boards, the public pressuring us?
I think it's a mindset issue. The thing that struck me when we spoke to John and Jen from Agents of Good, and they said something with real, it was super like salient to me when I wasn't thinking about editing. I was thinking about what they said. And they said this whole idea of the sector, there's two types of people in the sector. There's people with scarcity thinking and people with abundance thinking. It's the people with abundance thinking who want to actively collaborate and maintain collaboration, and the people that have scarcity thinking are constantly thinking there's not enough, we have to compete for everything we get. And that, I think that's a mindset that we can, it's a culture thing, right? It's a mindset that we can probably chip away at gradually, but it's in your individual organizations, that's a culture that comes from above. Like if people on even trustee level, but people at like senior level have that kind of scarcity thinking, then as a fundraiser, you'll kind of soak that up and that'll be your kind of your mantra. Whereas the people who are like abundance thinkers, and the sad thing is the people that tend to be the more abundance thinkers are people that have gone freelance and have got out of the systems, because they can make connections really easily, which is a shame because
they have to collaborate. Exactly.
They're inherently collaborative in order to survive. But Andy said it right. Like it's proof from these big pitches from corporate partners and you know London Marathon. It's proof that these organizations can work together harmoniously when they need to. But it's just a shame that it doesn't last. It seems to be like a calm before a storm kind of thing. But I think that the way they said it, the way John and Jen said it in their beautiful Canadian accents, was very like it really stuck with me.
Well, let's see, because it seems to contradict a charity's mission. You know, if you take someone like Charity Water, who we all love, you know, their mission is to whatever, to give, you know, make sure the world has clean water.
Yeah.
And it's not that their mission is Charity Water ensures that they all have clean water. It's that they all have clean water. And so, you know, whatever the best way to achieve that, and it almost certainly is with collaboration, it seems like the problem comes to the board or whoever, and they seem to think that there's competition. And I firmly don't believe there's competition in the sector. I mean, I believe you can compete if you want, but actually we've bigger things to compete with than each other. But I don't know, is it just a giant ship that we have to slowly change the direction of, or are we doomed? Is it something that the charity sector can never get over?
I think it needs someone to lead by example and break the mold. Like it needs one organization to say, whether it's London Marathon or whatever it is, that they foster this partnership and someone steps up and says, let's just keep this going, you know, let's keep whatever it is we've made going and see if that makes the pie bigger rather than us competing for the same size pie. Like how can we reach more people by expanding the pie? I don't know why I started talking about pie.
I'm hungry. Sunday lunchtime and you're hungry. I definitely agree with that, because I think there's a mindset that can be shifted. And one of the things that the Dementia Revolution charity spent a long time doing is explaining that just because they were collaborating didn't mean they were merging. And I think in my experience of places that I've worked, there's been a hesitation to collaborate because they haven't wanted to merge. And it's like, okay, but you don't have to. Like, you can work together as separate organizations. And I think there's two parts to it, one of which is working on egos of trustee boards and egos of individual organizations to actually serve their beneficiaries rather than their own annual report statistics. And secondly, to work together on finding ways that can collaborate that are obviously creating more pie, or at least not splitting it down the middle, because there just are those opportunities. And there are tens of opportunities that in particular small charities do not qualify for on their own because of funding limitations that can get together. And I think it's possibly one of the things that's missing from fundraising conferences is there's never like an implementation hour. There's never a collaboration hour. Me and Tom were at a student fundraising conference, which was for student union groups who were doing fundraising on campus as volunteers. And a good friend of ours, Claire Mills, ran a session on collaboration. And basically, it was an hour's workshop where she got people from geographically close universities together and ran them through coming up with three different ideas that they could collaborate on.
Wow.
And it was something I've never seen done before at a conference. Really cool. And allowed them to consider things well beyond their reach that they would have done before. And I've never seen that at a conference before. If it is ever going to happen, if we're ever going to become more collaborative as a sector, that's a great starting place for it. Because I think it's just not even on the table. Like, the reason it's not being chipped away at it is because no one has a chisel. Like, no one's being given the time to.
Which is so weird, because, you know, you do sometimes hear about charities collaborating, and everyone always loses their shit about how great it is. You know, like, corporates love it, the sector loves it, people win awards about it. And considering that, you know, you never hear anything negative about a collaboration, why are we not talking about it at conferences more? Why are we not kind of seeing that as an example and actually pushing it out more? There's so much fear about this stuff, maybe. I mean, I don't know.
The only thing I can think of is that people are worried about, like, quote-unquote, sharing their secrets. And I don't know how many secrets they actually have to share, but I think people think they have a lot more than they do. And that could possibly be part of it. But hopefully there is space for that to be added to the agenda in future.
Yeah, I think it requires like leadership. It requires someone just to kind of step away from the day to day and be like, right, let's make collaboration a core part of what we do. And I guess no one really owns that, right? It's kind of, it's organization wide. If you're a director of fundraising, you don't own collaboration. If you're a director of communications or marketing, you don't own it. It has to be everybody. And I think that's probably, if you can't collaborate internally, you're never going to find the kind of the metal to do it externally. It does work, you're right, and it's, you know, the sector press loves it and everyone loves it, the public would love it in theory, right? The public would respond way better to it because you are making the pie bigger. Don't know what the secret sauce is, though.
You're really hungry, Tom.
Sauce and pie.
That's why he's not on webcam. He keeps muting himself.
He's just stuffing his face. So, I mean, the whipped cream in this pie is, you know, people having these conversations and speaking out. And I think, you know, you guys have done a really good thing with this podcast by creating a platform where people have these conversations, you know, again, to see if we say the challenges out loud, if we say them so people can hear them, then maybe people step in and actually talk about how to collaborate to fix it. Maybe, you know, people are generous with their knowledge. Fundraisers are generous with their time. And I think, you know, it starts with a conversation like the ones you guys are facilitating.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that like at least sparks that idea that then someone can start building upon it. But you're right. You have to make the space available. Like, you have to start that conversation. And then people will think it's a normal thing to actually think about, and not once in a, you know, once every kind of big corporate pitch, we're going to think about it and never again. It's about maintaining that. And I think so many conferences could enable people to have those conversations in a more structured way, not just networking, you know, because it doesn't normalize it. It has to be normalized. I think the way, like, as Andy said, the way that was structured encourages that, and I think it might not work, right? We won't know until someone tries that at an event or a conference, and I think it's worth experimenting with.
Yeah, and it sounds like a really interesting thing she's done. It's amazing. Stepping back to your podcast a little bit, I'm curious, do you get any resistance from guests or people not wanting to be on it because they don't want to be heard to be not complaining, but they don't want to be heard to be negative?
That's a good question. Nice. I think you're welcome.
That's why I have the sector's number two podcast.
Oh, all right. I think people are quite choosy of their topic. We've not had anyone be asked and said no. which we're pretty chuffed with. We've had some pretty good guests come on board. We've had people change their topic, but we've also one of the things that we spoke about quite a bit after a couple of episodes was that we were mostly working with freelancers or consultants because they are freer to complain about things without having any implications. And we have been actually working on having less consultants and more people who are working with us on a daily basis, but that does come with more consideration of what it is that they can talk about. And that's led to more broad sector stuff. So, for example, Emily Casson spoke about hating the word viral, and that's quite specific to her job and her field. Whereas we had three people on a panel show talking about the representation of young fundraisers at conferences and in the sector, and they were all more than happy to talk about that because that wasn't complaining about their organisation, their manager, their working style. It was the state of the sector. Sure. And I think that is something that we have been considerate of, but also is beneficial because it's relevant to everyone at that stage.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, no one's gonna put their job on the line. I'd love to hear someone come on and be like, my boss is a total fucker. And
I'm praying for that day. I'm waiting for that day that we have a total shit show. It'll happen one day.
It'd be amazing. I'm not gonna keep you much longer because I know Tom's hungry. So if people want to find it, where do people listen to this podcast? Straight after this podcast, they're going to go listen to it. Where do they find it?
Come on, Andy, this is up to you, mate.
Oh, okay, fine.
You're being tested.
Tom does all the tech, so you can find it on all major podcasting apps, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and a place called Podbean.
Yes, it's on Podbean.
We record via Anchor, and Anchor proudly tells us that we're on Podbean about once a week. We're like, great, thanks, Anchor. You can find us on Twitter at Fixing Fund Pod, or you can just go on Spotify at Fixing Fundraising with Tom and Andy. Crushed it. Cool. I know the links. Yeah, boy.
Nice. Just search for the name of it, Fixing Fundraising. They'll find it on their podcast listening device. And Twitter, Fixing Fund Pod. I'll put links in the thing. And then as individuals, you're both very interesting guys doing interesting stuff. Two little charmers. Where do we find you online? Andy?
Tinder, no. You can find me on Twitter at Andy King Raising. Or I have a blog, which is andykingraising.wordpress.com because I'm too poor to pay for the premium service. So give it to you without the WordPress.com in it.
Shout out to WordPress. I'm at Tom Dufresne on Twitter, and it's mainly retweets of cute animals, but also some stuff about digital fundraising.
Excellent. All right. Well, I do recommend everyone goes and listens to you, goes and finds you, and I'm looking forward to the next episodes because I always enjoy them. So thank you very much for taking time out of your busy days to talk to me. It's been wonderful to speak to you both, Andy and Tom.
Thank you, Simon. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't. Whatever. You're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hey, this is Simon Scriver.
And this is Nikki Bell.
We are running a virtual fundraising conference on November 19th. It's called Fundraising Everywhere, and you can find it at fundraisingeverywhere.com.
There's some amazing speakers that we've got lined up for you. We've got some names on there that you will be familiar with and some speakers that you may not have heard before, but all of them will be sharing amazing fundraising methods that are proven to work, and they will be teaching us how to do that in our own charities.
We've tried to make it really affordable for all organizations, but for small charities, it is completely free. So go look at it at fundraisingeverywhere.com. Register now. Join us. It will be accessible. It will be affordable, and it is amazing.
Yes.